John, it's the first day of summer, and the 2022 Yankees are already to 50 wins. Are the Kansas City Royals going to get to 50 wins?
Joel, you're mean. It's good to see your true personality coming out.
How about the Reds? They're going to get to 50? The A's? Well, we're going to talk about the 2022 Yankees and just how good they are. We'll do awards. We'll talk about Betts and Machado's injuries. What's the status of Aaron Judge's contract? And what's the status of Jacob deGrom on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman? Welcome to the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, I mentioned it's the first day of summer. You know, I was a lunatic when I was back on the Yankee beat. I used to mark time to make the season go faster, and it used to be 40 games was a quarter of a season, 54 was a third of the season. Then 63 was a big deal to me because it meant we were down to double-digit number of games left. We went from 100 to 99. That came at about the first day of summer. Then 81 games was half. The trade deadline, September 1st. I used to do all that. Why don't I just do 50 wins? First team to 50 wins. That's the Yankees. Part of the time when I've marked time is me and you, we both watched the 1998 Yankees. Are we watching a better version than the 125 win when the postseason was over, New York Yankees in 1998?
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way right now. I mean, they're on pace for 121 wins. Seems like it. A Judge is having a year like no Yankee in 98 had. Bernie had a great year. Jeter was himself, which is to say he was great. O'Neill, obviously, really good. You know, they didn't have a player like Judge. They didn't have this kind of power. At least I didn't feel like they did at that time. Stanton, obviously, when he's healthy and in there, incredible power. Rizzo, been amazing. I mean, I think Jack Curry said he was the best 223 hitter in baseball. He's obviously raised that from there, but he's been amazing too. I feel like they had five great pitchers. If you remember the 98 team, Arambu was one of the five pitchers. Right now, you've got five great starting pitchers. You've got a great closer in Holmes. You know, obviously he's not Rivera at this point, although just came off a scoreless streak of 30-plus innings. So they feel pretty darn good to me right now.
Yeah, I think you talked about the separator for me, and I hope it's not nostalgia, but I'm going to stick with the 98 team. Partially, we know the end, right? They actually win the championship. But to me, time, even then, I think we knew a lot of this, and time proved it out. You could give the ball in the postseason to Orlando Hernandez, who was, I thought, the best big game pitcher of that era. David Wells was going to pitch well in the postseason. David Cone was going to pitch well in the postseason. Andy Pettitte, for the most part. Clay Holmes has done great. There's no one like Rivera. By the way, Mike Stanton was great setting up in the postseason. Ramiro Mendoza. So I think the proof here, and again, we're a long way from there. They still have to win the division, get through, etc. But I knew those teams, no matter who was starting a game, I believed that they would win or lose based on their talent that day. They'd never be afraid. Rivera would never be afraid. Mike Stanton would never be afraid. So I think that's the differentiator until I see otherwise from this group of pitchers.
Yeah, okay, I see it. I'll take Giancarlo Stanton over Mike Stanton. By the way, you'll remember he was called Mike Stanton.
I knew we were going to get there somehow with you. John, in the last few days, two of the most important players in the National League West were injured. Mookie Betts cracked a rib running into teammate Cody Bellinger chasing a fly ball, and Manny Machado badly sprained his left ankle. Amazingly, Machado has not yet, as we're recording this, gone on the injured list. Betts is going to miss some time. Who is impacted more in the NL West by this?
You know, I was going to say Machado, but then I saw that report where he's walking around like nothing happened to him. He is an incredible specimen. Remember, and this is going back a few years ago, the Orioles, when they were trying to sign Machado, they kind of towed the line because they said that he had this knee problem, and it has never come to fruition. I mean, he has been, I mean, maybe not Cal Ripken Jr., but among active players, he's been about the most durable superstar going. So, you know, I don't think Machado's going to miss many games with this ankle. He looked terrible at the time. I thought he was going to be out for months. So, you know, I think the Betts injury will be more impactful than the Machado injury. And Betts, I mean, Betts is a good healer too. I'm not criticizing him. Machado is just amazing to me.
To me, again, Machado is amazing. The fact is he was carrying them a lot with Fernando Tatis Jr. out. You know, on May 27th, John, they changed their lineup and they put Profar on top, Cronenworth 2 in front of Machado. You know, since then, they've scored the second most runs in the sport. Luke Voit woke up. He had like 16 extra base hits in about a 24-game period. Some other guys, Grisham, Nola, they began to stir. I think they could cover for whatever short-term period, partially because of something you've talked about a lot on this show in previous weeks. The depth of their starting pitching is exceptional, so I think that they could hold teams down. What worries me a little about the Dodgers, and it's always funny to talk about that, they're top three in averaging runs per game and preventing runs. But now look at the buckets. You've lost Betts for at least a month. Their best starting pitcher, Walker Buehler, is out at least 2 months. Craig Kimbrell is a mess closing games. Blake Treinen, who would be his natural replacement, is hurt. Take it. That's their best starting pitcher, their closer, their best everyday player. Justin Turner is looking 37 years old. Bellinger hasn't come back. You know, for a team that I think is still going to win 95-plus games because they do usually have depth, they have a lot of issues.
Yeah, they have issues. We talked about this last week. The middle of that lineup is not producing. Bellinger, Turner, Muncy, he's hitting somewhere around 160 at this point. That is not him. You know, people talk about the Padres pitching. It is awfully good. Gore has been terrific, rookie of the year, leader, and we're going to talk about the award leaders at this juncture a little bit later. And Musgrove, incredible. He's been amazing, one of the Cy Young
leaders.
Are you hinting? Well, I haven't said yet, but we'll see. He's certainly one of the couple good candidates for Cy Young. You know, they've got candidates for MVP with Machado and for rookie of the year with Gore and certainly for Cy Young with Musgrove. So, you know, the Padres are clearly a threat at this point. I had them as a playoff team, thought the Dodgers would win just like everybody else. Actually had the Dodgers winning the World Series. I'm worried about the Dodgers right now.
Yeah, for an exceptional team, they've got real issues. But, you know, they have a pedigree of both on the field, in the clubhouse, and in the front office figuring this out. John, you mentioned MVP, and I think for most of this kind of close to the first half of the season, now we're probably about 40, 45% of the way through the first half, Machado has been the National League MVP front runner. Betts was right in the top five someplace. If these guys are going to miss some time, especially Betts, we know that for sure. What do you think about this race right now? Who do you have?
Right now, I'm going to go with Goldschmidt. I love Machado. I love the narrative. You know, I'm swayed by all the stat people who look at the stats, and I'm looking at the stats, and Goldschmidt leads in all the main categories that we look at now. Batting average is not number one, but I look at that a little bit. Certainly on base, certainly slugging, and he leads in all of those categories, plus obviously OPS and OPS plus, total bases and hits. And, I mean, he's been fantastic to this point, and while St. Louis is not in playoff position as we do this, it's kind of close between them and San Francisco, close between them and Milwaukee, but I'd give the nod slightly. If I had a vote today, I'd go with Goldschmidt. Boy, Machado is close, though. I love the narrative. He carried that team without Tatis. I mean, the six intentional walks that lead the league, that tells you something. He is hitting 328, 174 OPS plus. Machado is a good candidate. I'm going to pick Goldschmidt.
Two things here, John. You mentioned what an Iron Man Machado is, and he is an Iron Man. Do you know since 2015, going into yesterday, him and Goldschmidt had the same exact number of games played, 1,072. They led the major leagues. Goldschmidt played yesterday. Machado didn't. So one of the things I always like and I look at is I do think availability matters. I'd go with Goldschmidt also. You gave a lot of important stats. Let me give one. With runners in scoring position this year, Paul Goldschmidt, 429, 525 on-base percentage, 857 slugging, the 1382 OPS. You know what's amazing? You mentioned the Cardinals are not in playoff position. The top four in the National League in Baseball Reference WAR, Machado is in there. The other three are Cardinals.
Yeah, Edman.
And Arenado.
Sure.
So they're getting incredible overall infield play. I will mention who's second in runners and scoring position in the major leagues, and that's that. And that's Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
Pete Alonso, 349 batting average and a 1317 OPS, mainly because of an 857 slugging percentage in that situation. He's been incredibly clutch, not just with power, a guy who's willing to take a base hit the other way. John, do you think he's in this race?
He is. I do think so. 63 RBIs. He's been great. He is the one slugger on that team. I mean, I wrote about what I called Buckball Today, I'm really taking advantage of opportunities, being an opportunistic team. We called it small ball, of course. Buck objected to that, said it's still 360 feet around the bases. That's really not what small ball's about, but he's a clever man. So, I mean, he is the one slugger on the team with the best record in the league, and he's been great. So I think he's in the race. He's probably running third. Betts is in there also. I would say probably fourth, but he might have in the same order. I don't know. Do you, Goldschmidt, Machado, Alonso, Betts would be my top four right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing I was comfortable with was Goldschmidt, Machado. I'm starting to think ahead, missing a month would really dim Betts. I mean, I guess if we're doing it right now, Betts would be in there. I think Betts is the best all-around player in the sport, so I always favor him. And look, I think you and I put a lot of stock into that middle word there, valuable. And to your point, they have the best record, the Mets, in the National League. They have one true power hitter. They're leading the league right in runs scored per game, and yet they're not getting the ball over the fence, and he has a lot to do with it. In the American League, the Yankees also have a premier power hitter. Is he, Aaron Judge, the front runner for the American League MVP?
Yeah, I think, first let me correct one thing that you said. You said Betts is the best player. I'm going to go with Mike Trout. I still think Mike Trout's the best player. But
well, you have a chance right here to say that Mike Trout is the American League MVP if you like him so much, John.
I do like him very much, but I think Judge, and I'm not trying to be provincial here. I know the war is a little down because somehow he has a negative war defensively. He's moved to center field and done that well. He was great in right field and taken on a new position.
Well, you and I do something that I think people who are kind of bathing the metrics, and you and I don't ignore the metrics. We're aware of these things.
Sure.
Don't like. Narrative matters. Like, and then they'll say, well, you pick the narrative. But the Yankees have the best record in the league. One of them is Judge seamlessly going to center field, even if we're going to say he's average there. Like, his ability to do that has increased, and lead off, and it has increased his value exponentially to the team, because Aaron Hicks, for most of this first half, has struggled, especially playing defense in center field. Judge is far better than Hicks in center field.
Yeah, Judge has been great. I don't know why the defensive metrics don't love him. We watch almost all the games, probably all the games, to be honest, and he's been really good defensively. Offensively, he's been a dynamic, leads in OPS plus. I don't quite understand, you know, I'm a math guy, but why he doesn't lead in OPS, but he leads in OPS plus. It might have something to do with the ballpark, but boy, he loves that ballpark. So I think the ballpark actually helps him. You know, obviously left field's not as easy as right field, but he's a right field hitter, as he points out, and maybe we're being provincial. I tweeted something about Judge being the front runner for the MVP, and boy, did I hear from Cleveland. I was on Cleveland radio stations, and they were all yelling at me. They were polite yelling, though. They're very polite in the Midwest. And if you look at Jose Ramirez's stats, they are pretty impressive. The walks to the strikeouts, amazing. 1,039 OPS, so even better than Judge there. Leads in RBIs. You know, and this is a team, nobody expected them to be in playoff position. Right now, they're tied with the Red Sox in playoff position because of Jose Ramirez. You can make a case. You can make a case, quotes, against Aaron Judge and for Jose Ramirez. I think I'm about to do it. I don't think it's crazy. You're actually picking Jose Ramirez?
Yeah, I want to go on Cleveland radio, John, very badly. And
all right, you're going to get on if you pick him. Because
I am going to pick him, and that's, it's not, I mean, look, I think we're probably really splitting hairs here. I do want to say, right now, in the American League, to your point, in baseball reference war, Rafael Devers of the Red Sox is leading. Trout is second. Ramirez is third. And Judge is fourth. By the way, tied with Kyle Tucker of the Astros, which, again, we should always take. War is interesting. It's an attempt to understand the total player. I don't know if it talks about total value. I mean, Mike Trout is second. Mike Trout was 0-26 when the Angels season fell apart. That's my narrative. They needed him badly to break out of that slump, and he was as bad as he's ever been.
We're going to disagree on this one because I think you're being provincial here. You're grading these games.
I'm being provincial. I'm picking the Cleveland guy to win the MVP.
Well, on this point, because you're counting these Yankee games as something above all the other games that the Angels played. I don't see them as more important than any of the other games.
The 0-26 wasn't all the Yankees. 0-10 was the Yankees, and the 0-26.
That's where it started. It started here in New York, and he completely
fell apart, and the team fell apart with him when they needed him most. John, I'm going to make my Jose Ramirez case my favorite way by making a basketball analogy, and I'm even going to make a Cleveland basketball analogy.
LeBron?
When LeBron went to his first finals, I think was 2007, the next best player on the team was who? Larry Hughes, Ilgaskis. I mean, it was a terrible team around him. Right. That's the point. They went to the finals because of that. Who's the second best player on
Andrés
the Cleveland?
Andrés Giménez.
Right. That's a pretty big jump down. Look at who surrounds Rafael Devers. Look who surrounds Aaron Judge. Jose Ramirez is doing this without a great supporting cast. You know, you mentioned it's 34 walks, it's 20 strikeouts. It's 62. I know we're not supposed to care about RBIs, but it's 62 RBIs in 60 games. And this is his numbers with runners in scoring position. 345 with a 1,304 OPS. He's been fantastic in every way. By the way, he's also stolen 11 bases. He does everything. He's a very good defensive third baseman, switch hitter. I mean, to me, again, you pick your narrative. Is Judge going to center field to increase the value of his overall numbers more valuable than Ramirez doing it without anything close to a real co-star? I'll take Ramirez getting the Guardians into the playoff mix.
Yeah, you know, on Judge, I can't believe I'm having to defend Judge here, but he not only has he moved positions, he's moved spots in the order from second to first. Which second?
Did he need
a,
like a yak and a Sherpa to get from second to first?
I think it's a little bit different. There's a transition. It's not as easy as you and I may think it is. The Yankees are the best team. There is that narrative.
What would the Guardians' record be without the Ramirez?
I understand. That's why I brought him up, and I think he's been terrific. They are in a weaker division.
Do you think he's second?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the battle.
So you're not suggesting I'm picking someone who would finish 10th here,
no,
right?
No. That's the battle, but Judge is the top player on the top team, so I like that narrative better, so that's my narrative more than a guy in the Central.
Did you just crap all over the Yale Central subtly there under your breath?
I will.
I'm going to get you on Cleveland radio
since
again.
You crapped on Trout
Kansas
earlier.
City, Detroit.
Let me put in a word for Trout. You know, all the games count equal. I'm not going to say their season ended because they didn't win in New York like you think.
You can't do that, John. They lost 14 games in a row. During that, Trout had an 0-for-26. Like, there's a point where the best guy has got to carry your team in a bad moment, win a couple of games in a way by himself. He fell apart when they fell apart, and now he's going to play in another meaningless season.
Prevented the 15-game losing streak, him and Ohtani. But
congratulations.
I think all the games count equally.
Didn't lose 15 in a row trophy.
All the games count equally. They're not out of it. I don't think he's the MVP. As I said, I think Judge is by a hair over Jose Ramirez.
We've given him enough MVPs in years where his team didn't get close to winning. So let's say an 0-for-26 disqualifies him when his team loses 14 in a row.
Not a democratic exercise. If he deserves to win it, he gets the MVP. He is the leader in OPS at this point. His 195 is the same as Judge. I don't know why they say Judge is the leader. They're both 195, but you know, OPS is a little bit of a funny number, so I'm going to trust them on that. But, I mean, let's remember that Trout had 4 game-winning home runs in one series. That is a record that will never be broken.
That was against your least favorite team in the sport.
Don't keep harping on that. They already hate
you. You kept harping on, like, he couldn't hit the Yankees, but he could hit Seattle. Let's give him an award for that. John, we didn't agree much here on these MVPs. When you come back on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman, we'll be discussing the Cy Young Awards.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
John, National League, American League, Cy Youngs, we're going to talk about it. Today is a day we don't know. We find out in August about which awards we're going to vote for. It's still an old stale way. You get some email that says, hey, this is the committee you're on. I think if people knew how it was done, they'd be shocked. We won't take them fully behind the curtains. But we've both been voters for over 30 years. Do you enjoy the process? Do you enjoy getting a ballot? Do you enjoy finding out, am I voting for NL MVP, AL Cy Young, NL Rookie, AL Manager, whatever it is? There's 8 altogether committees. Do you like doing it?
Yeah, I like the process. I definitely enjoy it. I like the whole thing. I like the debates afterward. And, you know, I know there's some pressure because we've seen some writers get criticized for their votes. Fortunately, my votes have just been okay. They have not been probably anything great, but I haven't gotten embarrassed by any of my votes yet. But I enjoy it for whatever odd reason. You know, we're in New York, so there's only 2 votes per award in each city. So there's, you know, one thing that everyone tells you, and I'm on Cleveland Radio and Chicago Radio and all these other radio shows all over the country, they're always complaining it's such an advantage to be in New York, but the reality of it is it's democratic. It's fair.
Let's list all the Mets MVPs.
There are none.
Right,
no
zero.
Mets MVPs.
Correct.
Jeter never won an MVP. I mean, right. He was the, arguably the MVP of the era.
A-Rod wasn't a popular guy among reporters. He won MVPs. It wasn't like, again,
there's
I
nothing
agree
to do with
you.
Popularity. Has nothing to do with New York. Let's put that to rest because that Met argument is the best one. Nobody from the Mets has ever won the MVP. But this is a thing that you hear over and over again. So it may be a little odd, obtuse, whatever you want to call it. We may do it old school, but I think Jack O'Connell, I'm going to say he does a good job because I'm now angling to get the MVP vote this year. No, he does do a good job, and it is fair. You know, I think we've blown in on a few instances. Pedro Martinez should have been the MVP in 99. Verlander or Britton probably should have won the Cy Young, not Porcello. Remember that? The writers yeah. came out and said, oh, we handed our ballots in 2 weeks early. You never do that. We always, you know, you and I are pretty diligent about it. We're going to do it right after the season like you're supposed to and count everything that happens in the season. So we're not going to do that, but the writers have blown in. Those writers deserved the recrimination that they got for blowing it. So I do enjoy it. I do particularly enjoy the MVP vote because, you know, 10 spots makes it much more interesting. It's a bigger award. And the Cy Young, since they've gone to 5, that's good too. But whatever they give me, I'm happy to do it.
So I like the voting because baseball isn't a national sport anymore. Like, people care about their local team. It's very provincial, except for a few things. Good drug story, good fight, Hall of Fame, and awards. Our awards still matter more. Like, who is the MVP of the NFL season? People don't remember. You know, these matter. And I think one of the reasons it matters is we fight over every year over what the middle word means, valuable. Like, right. You know, there's a real fight about it. And John, we've kind of talked about it and joked about it on the air here where I've tried to encourage you multiple times. Like, don't look at Twitter. Don't look at your email. Like, these controversial times. Like, and I am a concern that Hall of Fame and awards voting have gotten skewed over the last decade because a lot of voters, and again, these voters could come after me and say, how do you know what I'm thinking? Either want to satisfy the internet mob, so they vote for a bunch of people who, if I said, really, is that guy a Hall of Famer, or do you just want to get a pat on your back for everyone who likes his war case, or you don't want to be yelled at because of his war case, and did you just vote for the MVP 1 through 10 on who's the best? Yeah. Like, we just showed who's leading it with Tommy Edmonds leading the National League in war. He's not the most valuable player in the National League. Just no. Not. And so, to me, I am concerned that I do think that's why guys, and I'm stumping, and I'm sorry this will be arrogant, I do think when the committees are put together, more thought should be put into, by August, you know what the controversial votes are going to be. And I would think very seriously, if I was in charge of putting the sturdiest people, you know who yeah. these people are already, who will not be swayed by some internet mob on how to vote in those situations. So we're going to get a real sea change in this. And I think that's probably going to carry over to the Cy Young Awards as well, John. NL Cy Young, where do you stand right now?
Tempted to pick Musgrove. He's had, like, in some sense, a perfect season. He's 8-0. I know we're not supposed to look at the record as much, and I do agree with that. I do think that the record is not a fair indicator of a pitcher's value, but he's been terrific, and I was tempted to pick him, but, you know, I'm going to go with the guy who happens to have the high WAR, 4.1 WAR, Alcantara, who I just saw pitch, 99 innings pitched. Leads the league, and his ERA at 1.72, just behind Musgrove. I mean, Musgrove is almost perfect, yet I'm going to go with Alcantara based on the greater innings. I just feel like he's a slightly better pitcher at this point. It's a two-man race at this point. I have to think you're going to pick Alcantara or Musgrove, right?
Yep, I agree with you. I think this is Blake Snell versus Justin Verlander from 2018 all over again when Snell stupidly won. Talk about stupid
we
internet.
We're not perfect. We make
stupid
some bad
internet
votes.
War ratio votes. One guy pitched 33 and a third more innings and was great. Like, if you told Justin Verlander that year, let's eliminate, you know, essentially 33 innings, his numbers would be even better. Like, availability, accountability, filling up the 1,400 innings, that matters. And to me, this year, the Musgrove-Alcantara argument is going to be a little like that. Right now, we're talking about a guy who has 20 more innings than Musgrove. But it really goes beyond that. In an age when everyone can't wait to go to their bullpen, where I heard teams crying because they were going from 14 pitchers to 13 pitchers
on
the roster.
Yes,
like we're going to run out of pitchers. Well, you're a terrible freaking manager if you're going to run out of pitchers with 13 of them. But he has 10 more innings than anyone else in the sport right now. 10 more innings than anyone else in the sport. He's completed, John, you covered the game the other day. He completed 8 innings for the 6th time this year. No one else has done that more than 3 times. There's 8 teams that haven't done it once, and he's done it 6 times by himself while maintaining a 172 ERA and overall being exceptional. To me, right now, as good as Musgrove has been, that one was easy for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you seem to do the work on this one, so I feel good about my Alcantara pick. I think he could go longer, too. I mean, he pitched the 8 innings. They're going longer with him than they are with anybody, but he was hitting 100 miles an hour, I've seen, in the 8th inning in some of these games. I think Mattingly may end up using him as a complete game pitcher eventually. Tanner Scott's doing okay as their closer, but yeah, I'm glad we agree on something. That's good. Alcantara over Musgrove, but both are deserving in a sense.
Alcantara is kind of like the baton pass from Justin Verlander, the workhorse ace.
Yeah.
Verlander won 2 American League Cy Youngs in his day. Let's talk about that one, John. Who do you have right now for the American League Cy Young?
We have not compared notes, so we'll see if we agree. I'm going to go with McClanahan. You know, I see a triple crown there for him. He leads in strikeouts, he leads in whip, and he leads in ERA. So when I see that, I got to go with him. Cortez has been great. I feel bad not picking him. I love the guy. He's been amazing for the Yankees. Manoah has been good. Martin Perez has been good. Blackburn, out of nowhere, has been really good for the A's. Verlander, obviously, is a terrific pitcher and first ballot Hall of Famer. I think it's McClanahan.
Yeah, John, you know me. I don't do cop-outs very easily. I think that's the right answer. I was looking at him and Manoah a lot. I obviously drilled down on Cortez, but I couldn't separate Cortez from another not particularly hard-throwing lefty, and you mentioned him, Martin Perez from Texas. Their numbers are very similar. In fact, I think you can make a case that Perez's numbers, because he just doesn't allow home runs, this contact is so soft against him that he's actually having a better year. So since the awards season is really not even halfway over, I just want to say this, and maybe I'm definitely just angling to get on Cleveland radio. Keep an eye
it's
on
quite an honor.
Keep an eye on Shane Bieber. He has really come on. He had a real stinker early in the season that skewed his numbers. I think he gave up 7 runs. But over the last month, over the last 31 games, Cleveland has the second best overall ERA in the sport, and he's down in the low 2s, 2.18. Bieber, and he's starting to look like Shane Bieber again. He is an AL Cy Young Award winner, and I would just keep an eye on him. You know, I mentioned Verlander, 2-time Cy Young Award winner. Jacob deGrom. John, you've been out at the ballpark. You've been doing some work on this. This is one of the big questions, not just in New York. It's important. Atlanta's starting to push towards the top of the division. Philadelphia's played better. The Mets have big dreams here, and I think it's a lot easier to see those dreams come true if Jacob deGrom is part of them. What do you think about Jacob deGrom right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's no set date for deGrom. We know with Scherzer that he's going to pitch in Binghamton for his rehab start. That is tonight as we do this, and they're hopeful that that goes well and that he is back Sunday at Miami. So that is more clear-cut. If he is, that's 5.5 weeks, which beats the 6-to-8-week estimate when he originally went out with the oblique. DeGrom, it is still not clear. He throws every day, doesn't complain of an arm problem, but the impression that I get and the hints that I get is that he will be back around the All-Star break, a little before or a little after. It seems to me, if you were going to take a guess, it would say maybe he's going to be a second-half pitcher, come back just after the All-Star break, and that will be quite a gift for the Mets because when healthy, DeGrom is the best pitcher in the sport. As we know, we have not seen it now, and it could be basically a full year. He didn't pitch second-half last year, first half this year. I think it'll be right after the All-Star break would be my guess right now based on all of the tea leaves I'm reading and the hints I'm getting.
You know, it feels to me, John, like they're slow walking him and just saying there's been some fragility in his past as far as staying healthy. We're a very good team. We do believe, to your point, that Scherzer will come back. We've weathered this well, which has shown both our talent and temperament are strong this season. Let's get this guy perfect, as close to perfect as possible, to make 10 starts down the stretch and be able to make any place up to 5 or 6 starts in October, they hope, right, to make a full run. And I just think they've thrown away the calendar with it and just said, let's make sure the engine is running perfect. And that leads to another question, John. We have spent a lot of time in this city, and it's really as big a question as there is in baseball, wondering what is Aaron Judge's future? He's a free agent at the end of the year. Jacob deGrom can opt out, and he has said he's going to opt out. You've made this point strongly on this show several times that even if it's just a start or 4 or 10, that is not going to dissuade him from opting out, that there will be teams that will give him more money than in his contract right now. What do you think about his long-term future? Is it a New York long-term future?
I'd be guessing to a degree because I have not asked him directly that question. There is one or two people with the Mets who say that he does like New York. You know, I'm not sure of that. You hear the rumors that he'd rather be pitching somewhere else. As I said, I can't be 100% sure what's in his mind. I think the reason he's saying I'm opting out is because he doesn't like his contract. I mean, that's pretty clear. He changed agents even after he got hurt. I'm still opting out. He looked at the contract. He probably, the $30 million salary looks okay for 1 year, next year. But that team option for another $30 million or so probably tells him, you know, he doesn't want the team to have the team option, and he can do better overall if he opts out, no matter how many appearances he makes. So I do believe he's opting out because of the contract. You know, if I were to guess, and I don't know this, he does not confide in me, and I have talked to him the last few days about, you know, stuff around the ballpark and things like that. You know, I was doing a crossword puzzle. I went up to him. We chatted about that. I talked to him about a few things. I don't know whether it's New York or whatever. He's not really relating to everybody. Maybe it's the writers. I don't know. I'd be guessing, but you hear rumors, and I kind of believe that he might prefer to be elsewhere. Don't know that, as I said. You hear rumors that maybe he'd prefer to be with Atlanta, with Houston, Tampa. Doubt they'll have that kind of money, but that'd be a guess on my part. You know, all these great pitchers, I don't know if you find this, they're pretty quirky. You know, they're great artists.
They're tennis players.
Is that what it is? I love,
you know, like they're
players.
One.
I love tennis.
They're like solo artists who play on a team.
Yeah.
And I think they have to have, you know, they stand in the middle of the field. They initiate all action, right?
Yeah.
Nothing happens until they release the ball. They decide it. So I think it, John, look, we know, we could pretend. There's strong whispers about that. I will say that Jacob deGrom seems to love New York and playing baseball when he's healthy once every 5 days, right? Like, it's really on his body. He loves the competition. He loves doing it.
Yes, very competitive.
So, like, are we reading body language and stuff? And it would be exactly that if he was playing in Atlanta or Houston, etc. I just feel so much of this is literally, right, in his right hand. That's throwing a baseball and signing a contract. How does he throw a baseball when he comes back? Like, he said he's going to opt out, but I mean, if this goes miserably, like where he gets hurt again, I'm not exactly sure there's going to be teams lining up to even equal what's in the Met thing. I know it's not a ton of money, but it's still enough. The other thing is, the owner of this team has shown he will go to $300 million or more. So if DeGrom pitches well, the lifelong fan in Steve Cohen, who understands what keeping DeGrom for his career would mean, I can't imagine he'll say, well, just go wherever you want. So to me, this is about DeGrom. Can he pitch well and not just say it? Does he really want to be here? At some point, if he pitches well, he'll get smoked out. We're going to find out because Steve Cohen will offer him plenty of money to stay. And then we'll find out, does he want the money someplace else?
Yeah, it's funny that he has to be smoked out to find out whether he likes New York. We could tell that Aaron Judge likes New York. And, you know, Rizzo obviously is taken to New York. You can tell that with them. These pitchers, you know, I kind of breezed over it before. They are quirky. They are artists. You know, they all have their individual personalities. And it's all depends on their arm. I mean, it can go like that. It is a difficult life in a sense. There is a lot of pressure on them. And, you know, I found this with Kershaw and basically almost all the all-time greats. And when Jake pitches, he is an all-time great. So I'm not denigrating him. He is a quirky guy compared to, like, Rizzo. You can walk right up to him, chat with him, and have a great personality. He has a great personality, and he's happy to talk to you, give you the answers. It's not like that with Jake. So maybe I'm reading more into it than there actually is there in terms of whether he likes New York or not. But, you know, that's my read, that, you know, he doesn't He might prefer to be somewhere else. That'd be my guess. I don't know that for a fact, but that'd be my guess. And it's, in terms of the opt-out, I believe him. I think he's going to opt out. As long as he gets on the mound for one game and shows something, he's going to be able to beat it. Because you saw what these guys got. Verlander, 6 innings over 2 years, what he got. You saw what Syndergaard got, barely pitched in relief, beat the qualifying offer. So I think Jake can beat it, and I think he will opt out. Whether he stays, still a mystery.
You mentioned the other big guy in town who's going to be a free agent. That's Aaron Judge, and I have a suspicion when we open our notebooks, when we come back on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman, we'll be talking about Aaron Judge and his contract. John, Aaron Judge's arbitration hearing is the penultimate one of this arbitration season. The Yankees and him are headed there as we speak. What do you think short-term, what do you think long-term with Aaron Judge?
Yeah, I can't believe that they're going to go to arbitration with Aaron Judge. There have been some negotiations. They've tried to avoid it, but at this point, Judge has requested $21 million. Yankees had offered $17 million. They have not been able to close that gap. You know, I can't imagine they could say anything bad about Aaron Judge in that hearing. So, I mean, they'll get through it, but it's a weird circumstance.
I have a feeling they're going to find a way.
Well, what can you say? I mean, you're going to cite the fact he missed some games, obviously.
Right, because remember, we should remind the people, our listeners, you can't talk about the 2022 season. This is, you're right, setting your 2022 contract because there was a lockout. This is why the arbitration spilled into the season. So this is about 2017 to 2021 for Aaron Judge.
Right, but there's human nature involved in this. Are they really going
Absolutely.
To avoid or ignore the fact that Aaron Judge is the MVP at this point? So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they got a day to go. So potentially they could resolve this. Let's hope that they do. But as we do this now, I know they have not.
John, you're again, something you're really good at. If the Yankees sold tomorrow, what's the least they sell for? $5 billion? $6 billion?
They're estimated, yes, I would say that's probably a fair.
Okay.
I'd probably go for more, but yes.
So in the middle of what could be a magical season, they're going to let $1 million or $2 million so that they can please Central Baseball and fight for every penny. To me, you just go, hey, the middle ground's $19 million. We'll give you $1 million bonus for making the All-Star team, which means you're at $20 million. We'll give you another $1 million bonus if you finish top three in MVP. We're essentially giving you $21 million, but we're putting it down as 19 so we don't get killed. Yeah. Like, just settle this. So you're in the middle of a season. Judge has been able to put all the negotiation stuff aside. I would not create a new reason to have any disenchantment in the middle of magic.
I mean, you're talking about human nature. Human nature is to be competitive. Certainly all these people, whether it's the ball players or the people running the Yankees, they're competitive. They're not going to throw in the towel and just give them the $21 million as much as you or I or the fans would want that. That's not going to happen. Hopefully they resolve it somehow. I like your solution to do it with incentives, maybe, to get him to that $21 million. We'll see. I hope they do
it. They regret if they gave him $21 million for the season he's having. The only regret they'd have is if they screw up the season in any fashion by fighting with him when they're a $5 billion, $6 billion, $7 billion team. Okay. It just seems crazy. With all the competitiveness, by the way, the guy on the other side of the table is competitive also, and we get to notice it 4 or 5 times a night when he bats. So, like, I just find it insane that we're at this moment. As we're talking, John, 6 weeks exactly away from the trade deadline, when I throw up in my notebook, you know, I'm sure you're hearing it also, the beginning of whispers of which teams are kind of out there. You know, you're hearing Dodgers, Padres, Twins. A team I keep hearing a lot that's out there is the Blue Jays. I think they're kind of like an all-in team in a lot of ways, though the tricky thing is there's almost no way to win the division. But the difference is if you get in as a wild card this year, at least it's not a single game. It's a best 2 or 3. Relief pitching and desperate. I think we saw this in the Yankee series also that just was played. Left-hand hitting. They want to try to find a left-hand bat. At the moment we're speaking, 457 plate appearances by lefty hitters, by far the fewest in the sport this year by Toronto. And, you know, if we start naming off Josh Bell, Anthony Santander, they're both switch hitters, both hit well from the left side. Benintendi, we talk about every week. Ian Happ, another switch hitter. Tyler Naquin. There's not a star, But, like, can they at least diversify when they face the Coles of the world, who you would at least want to throw some left-handers against the better pitchers? So I think that's a team that when I'm talking to other teams, I'm saying, who do you feel is, like, aggressive early? They're like, they sense that Toronto would like to get things done.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be an easy market. It's a seller's market at every position, but particularly for left-handed hitting. The Braves need left-handed hitting as well. So, and those are not, I mean, those are good players. They're not huge. Yeah, they're not difference makers. You know, I could see the Mets for some of those players too, because, you know, obviously J.D. Davis is a pretty good hitter, but he's been their kind of like their DH. You could get a more established hitter to be the DH.
I think the Mets need a left-hand hitter.
I could see Bell as a DH for the Mets. Obviously a DH, because Alonso, the MVP candidate, he's going to be the first baseman.
I would remember as we get closer to that date, that the team that won the World Series last year also won the trade deadline with a bunch of players that we didn't jump up and down about at the time. The Eddie Rosarios, the Jock Petersons, the Adam Duvals, Jorge Solares. 6 weeks, I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. And we'll wrap up and look ahead when we come back. Thanks for listening to the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman, our new baseball podcast from the New York Post. Thank you to Jake Brown and Andrew Hartz for producing the show. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and write us a nice review. You can follow John on Twitter. It's at John Heyman. I'm a little more complicated, at Joel Sherman, and you got to add the one, at Joel Sherman 1. John, what are you looking forward to this week before we meet again?
Yeah, I'm going to look forward to the Astros at the Yankees. Sorry to be provincial and stick with our local teams, but, you know, the Yankees still feel a little bit bitter over the 2017 season, and every time the Astros and the Yankees get together, it's something, and those, frankly, are the two best teams in the American League, and I think there's a separation between those two and everybody else.
Yeah, I'm down to cover two of those games. I'm looking forward to them, John, because to me, the new stadium has not sounded like the old stadium in much ways, but it has been more alive this year. I wonder what having the team that eliminated them from the playoffs in 2015, 2017, and 2019 will mean to that home crowd. I'm sure we'll be talking about that and much more next Tuesday on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.